Guasó, bro.
Ay.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
And hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Third Sub Podcast, episode 196 of the show. I'm your co-host, Alexander Gongi-Ruzic, joined as always by Sammy Rowan. And we've got lots to dive into once again this week. Great weekend of MLS action, by the way. I had the chance to tuck into a little more games than usual, and it was enjoyable. It was enjoyable fare. Shout out to the iPad for adding multi-view so I can watch up to four at once. It's cool. You can like touch the screen and change volumes really easily and kind of just bounce between the all of them. I think that was a bit cool because, of course, 360 is there for that. But something nice about the control over which four games you watch and how you control that. So tucked into a nice weekend of MLS action. Of course, the Vancouver Whitecaps had a great weekend. 3 points on the road. You don't care how it looks, how it gets done. You take those to the bank. Now for them, a mini two-game road swing continues. They get set to head to Dallas after, of course, their trip to San Jose. But before we break it all down, Sam, how are you doing this week?
Yeah, doing very well, Alex. Excited to be back in Vancouver in less than a week's time. Check out some training, be at some matches. That's going to be fantastic. So, you know, as well as seeing my podcast co-host in person. So, it's good times and good times to be a Whitecaps supporter as well, right? Bit of a spotty opening day performance at home, but they get on the board in San Jose, get their season off to a start. I know it's way too early, but hey, after two matches, you're sitting above the playoff line in the West. You know, it's the right way to start a season, already off to a better start than 2023. So we're going to dive into San Jose. Certainly not a picture postcard in terms of the quality of the performance. There were some sketchy parts, some uninspired parts, but there was also, I think, a lot to really like about the way the Whitecaps performed down in San Jose. So we'll break that down a little bit. We'll do our Around the MLS segment. Then we'll look ahead to FC Dallas this weekend. As you mentioned, they continue this short road stint before a very home Pacific Northwest heavy portion of the schedule. After this, you've got four home games, a trip down to Seattle. So, you know, they're going to be used to that UBC training facility. They're going to be used to their own beds and all that stuff after this, but one more road test before that home stretch. So we're going to break it all down here on another great episode of the Third Sub Podcast.
Yeah, for sure. Lots to look forward to, especially the fact that you're heading out to the West Coast again. You're touching those West Coast waters after getting a little dip in the Atlantic. It'll be nice to have you back around here. Certainly tuck into a game as well, just like the old days, sitting in the press box side by side. It'll be a good time. And hopefully there's some good games. But yeah, I mean, to start, I think it's worth mentioning this was a very good win against San Jose. I think because this was a version of the Whitecaps we haven't seen yet. Because I think it's funny if you look back at the game itself, the first 60 minutes were not good. Let's just say for the Whitecaps, you can put it mildly. It was really not good. The good news is it wasn't really good for either team. It was very low event. I think at one point the XG felt it was like 0.10 to like 0.05. And it was just like, what are we doing here? Just nothing was happening. But you weren't mad at that in a sense. Of course, you're frustrated because you want to watch a good, entertaining game. But you're like, look, for the Whitecaps, you're on the road. It's low event. It's nil-nil. You can't be mad if it finishes like that. So for them to wake up, throw on all the heavy machinery on the field, essentially throw on at least, you know, two starters in Ahmed and Raposo. I think, you know, at least Ahmed went fully healthy. He's a starter. And I think even right now, Raposo, he appears to be kind of one of the best Whitecaps options at fullback. They bring those two in. They bring someone in, Afafa Pico, who certainly feels like he could be starting based on how he's playing off the bench. And then you bring in maybe he's just misunderstood, Alessandro Schopf. Apparently, if you just ask him to hit half volleys from the top of the box, he can do a job for you in that regard. And yeah, the subs really changed the game. And I think that was nice from the Whitecaps that they were able to grind out for 60 minutes, bring in the subs, open up the game, and could have won by three or four with how they were attacking. And I think that was a nice response because, man, they looked very dead in the attack for a while. And there's some genuine questions to be had at the attack. But in the end, you win 2-0. And the defense is looking really good right now. Like, again, we've been saying it, at least I've been saying it since the Tigres game, but that's two games of MLS play. Two very good games, both by the numbers. I think, of course, early days, Caps are like top five in XG against in the whole league. And then just in terms of the actual, what I'm seeing with my eyes, like it's good defensively. It's very low event. It's very organized. Not much breaking them right now.
I think I'll pick right up where you left off. That's the biggest change for me is, the personnel's not changed that much other than the insertion of Matias Laborda. Obviously, he was suspended the first match, but looked to pick up right where he left off against Tigres in this match. I like the assertiveness, just the aggressive yet calm head at the back that we saw from the Uruguayan. But then also just like tactically, in terms of their structure, just looking like a much better drilled, calmer, more organized defensive unit this season. And that has to be a credit to Vanni Sartini, spanning back to the offseason throughout training camp. He's obviously been able to do something to just get these guys all on the same page. Yoi Takaoka, I think, also a part of that, just like being more confident, marshaling things from the back, shouting out instructions. Keeping everyone focused on the right thing. So that's a huge positive. I mean, if the Whitecaps can just keep, even if it regresses a little bit, but if they're somewhere near anywhere in this defensive area in terms of quality, I think that's good news in the long term. Conversely, on the other side of the pitch, obviously you expect more from this Whitecaps team in terms of attack. Now, it is worth mentioning, we're talking three goals through two matches. Like, it's not that they haven't been shut out. It hasn't been clean sheets. It's not a disaster at the attacking end, but evidently there's some concerns about the Demir Krylak as part of the front three experiment, right? I think that's we were a little surprised at the how many minutes Krylak played against Tigres, and you're kind of like, oh, it's preseason, they're working some stuff out. And then to see him start and play extended minutes in both of the first two matches of the MLS regular season, I think that was a little bit surprising, especially given Alex. I mean, we talked on the last podcast that it wasn't even necessarily about starting Krylak. It's starting Krylak and asking him to do things that are not his forte, to be strong and hold up play, to run off the ball, to put in that kind of work that just doesn't seem super well suited to his best traits. It's certainly something the team's going to have to look at. You wonder why there's a reticence to start a Fafa-Pico, at least through the first two matches. I wonder, I mean, I like the subs they made in this match. Obviously, it made a huge difference. That's really when the match turned for Vancouver, but the fact that Levante Johnson didn't get a bigger look, that was something I was hoping for and kind of expecting in this past match. Hopefully we see it down in Dallas. Yeah, they need to mix something up front, but I like the fact that what did we talk about in the season preview, Alex? You mentioned, I think very astutely, that the Whitecaps need to learn how to win a little bit uglier this season. And you outlined so well. There was like 10 matches from last year where it was like, oh, they really should have been able to grind out a little bit more. Oh, they let another team come back and get a draw. They blew a lead. They weren't able to find a goal despite being the better team. This match was kind of the opposite of that, as you said, ugly through the first 60. But the Whitecaps almost played rope-a-dope with the Earthquakes, right? They let them throw a bunch of punches, tire themselves out, just put their hands up, blocked all those punches. And then finally, it felt like when Espinoza and Obobese had exhausted themselves, then all of a sudden the Whitecaps made some subs. San Jose's transition defending, which as we mentioned, is not good. It did not look good in this match. Eventually that was exposed, and then the Whitecaps really broke things open. So I thought an unsexy but mature and impressive in like a low-key way in terms of performance. So You know, I leave reasonably encouraged about where the Whitecaps are at, other than that mix in the front three, which obviously they need to do something about. And I don't necessarily think it's, oh, well, if they had a DP striker, all would be fixed. I think it's just more the pieces are there. It's about finding the right combinations. And, you know, that's just going to take probably a little bit of time, despite the fact that we maybe think on this podcast we have the solution. It's taking them a while to figure it out.
Yeah, no, it's exactly that. I think you would take the fact that after two games or even four, if you count Tigres, you're sitting here being like, oh, the defense looks great, but they can't score. Because again, I agree that there's personnel. And I think what's the biggest question is going to be how they go about fixing it. Because to be fair, it does feel partly tactical, partly personnel. Because I think, for example, the first game, Krylak was the right call. It didn't work. They took him off. They had a nice burst at the end of the game. And, you know, and then this game, it felt like Krylak was the wrong choice. But then there's how he's been deployed has been a big worry, because he's just been asked to, like, stretch the defense and run in behind and play like a nine, where it's like, no, the reason why you want a Krylak on the field is he can play between the lines. He can be like another 10, right? He can be that link man. And then they're asking him to just stretch the field. And it's like, guys, there's Levante Johnson, there's Fafa Pico, there's guys who can legit run. And then that's where it becomes interesting, though, because, yeah, as soon as Pico comes on, the game opened up. I think, again, Caleb Wilkins, as he you know, always does, astutely put it on Twitter, saying that, like, you know, it's wild how open the game got when Pico come on. I think there's someone underneath them in the comments being like, yeah, imagine if you had this profile of Pico as a DP. That's a whole other story. But it just shows you that, like, especially for a Whitecaps team that has, you know, a lot of slower names, say, up front, it just shows about what it can do just to have one guy who has that threat of stretching things out. It forces teams to be honest, because I think that's something too, where San Jose was defending very high, but then the Whitecaps couldn't punish them. So there are several moments where there were 3-on-2s, 4-on-2s to be had, as has been famous for them now, but then they just didn't have the speed to make anything of it.
I was going to say, when you're talking about Krylak stretching the lines, I'm imagining a couple of moments where Gold was on the ball in the center of the pitch, like right around the center circle, and you had White and Krylak running down, you know, to kind of flank him. And it was like Krylak and White are moving in quicksand. Like, you see the space, they don't have the pace to run into it. And it was frustrating in those moments, because that's, again, like, I think I'm very sympathetic to, this has not been poor from Demir Krylak over the first two matches. This is just a bad deployment. I do wonder to what extent this was just initially during the match, I was frustrated about it. And then I kind of wondered whether this was just the Whitecaps plan. They were going to go in and sort of wear San Jose down through the first 60 minutes, not try to create anything too crazy, not try to stretch themselves. And then they were going to spring these substitutions on San Jose in the second half. I'm not saying it necessarily would have been the way I would set up for this match, but if that's the game plan, it did certainly work at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's exactly it, right? It's, you can be like, you know, you can put out that certain lineup to start, and one that's a lot slower, and then tactically, you know, switch things up. But obviously for the Whitecaps, they felt Krylak was the man to go from the start. I don't think that's a decision I'd necessarily agree with. But, you know, look, at the end of the day, they do go out and get the result. But yeah, I think I am interested to see what happens, because I think it was very interesting that even in that first game where Charlotte was sitting a lot deeper, it's just something about the deployment where it just feels like Krylak, White, and Gall, they're almost like too separated from each other. They're not connecting. They're not, if you want those three on the pitch together, you want them to have that sort of buildup. They showed in the first leg against Tigres, for example. Heck, even in the second leg, they were connecting, and now it feels like they're not even connecting. And you wonder if maybe teams are kind of realizing, like, oh, maybe if we just sit compact, sit narrow, you can kind of take away that space and deny them that. So I think that's going to be, I think, the big tactical question. Because, yeah, I think defensively what's nice is, from what we've seen, appears sustainable. Like, they're not asking Yohei Takaoka to make a lot of saves and bail them out. Their midfield's giving them good cover. Everyone seems to know what they're doing off the ball. You know, I think Laborda and Blackman are playing a really big role in terms of the outside center backs and covering for the lack of, you know, wing backs, that they're more like wide midfielders, as Vanny likes to say. I think Ranko Veselinovic is well in the middle, doing a good job of holding things down. You know, maybe these are signs of him kind of figuring out little details of his role to kind of avoid some of the problems that plagued them last year. So I think that's encouraging. But yeah, I think that's going to be the big question of what does it take to maybe see a bit more of Pico, a bit more of the Johnson, Levante, right? Just to offer that sort of different look. So yeah, very strange game in that regard, because I feel like what we know about San Jose doesn't tell us enough about the Whitecaps, because there was a lot of areas too where we're like, look, they're fullbacks. And finally, the Whitecaps, once they had the speed, they were able to get at the fullbacks. So I think it'll be very interesting to see this Dallas team, because this Dallas team is, again, a low event, defensive first sort of team this weekend. That's going to be a test for the Whitecaps of, okay, how they break them down. Do they need maybe a bit of speed to stretch things out? Do they go Krylak again? Because on paper, what we've been saying is games where teams are sitting back, you want Krylak. Teams where they're sitting forward, you want Pico. Well, this game looks like one where they'll be sitting a little further back. So is it the Krylak game, or do you try a Pico just to liven up the offense? Right, I think that's kind of the big question, of course, other than how many minutes can you get out of Ali Ahmed? Because it feels like right now when he's on the pitch, good things are happening, of course.
It definitely feels like, to summarize so far this season through two matches, you know, defensive tactics has been like an A minus or an A, and attacking tactics, at least in terms of the starting lineup, has been like a C minus or a D. So, you know, contrasting ends of the spectrum, but if there's a group that you have confidence in to figure it out, I think it has to be Vancouver's attacking players. So I feel like, you know, we're just waiting for that breakthrough for White and Gall to be fair, they did have a couple moments. I mean, Brian White thwarted by the hands of Danielle once, and then a tight angle on another one where he wasn't able to quite sneak it in at the near post. But there were a couple of those. They were sparing, but there were a couple Gall and White moments that were positive. Alex, I'm just thinking through some of the individual performances in this match. You know, Yohei Takaoka was not busy, but the two saves he made were very sharp stops. The free kick that tried to beat him at the near post from Espinoza. And then I think it was, who's the newcomer to the forward group for San Jose?
Oh, Pellegrino.
Yeah, Pellegrino, he had that curling shot. It was a tricky one through traffic, and then he missed that header immediately afterwards that was a massive chance for San Jose to get in the match. But yeah, I thought Takaoka was sharp. You mentioned Ranko already. Despite the fact that maybe in the long term I have my concerns about Ranko, I thought this was a really solid match from him. Now, I don't know if San Jose did a lot to really challenge that back line for Vancouver, so we'll see how they fare against better teams, more dangerous, more diverse attacking threats, because I think that's the one weakness that we saw in this match from the San Jose team, is that if it wasn't Espinoza whipping it across, if it wasn't Obobese causing chaos in the box, San Jose was kind of out of ideas. So that was maybe a little simple for the Vancouver Whitecaps to defend. So that'll be something to track in the long term. But you mentioned, it's on the notes here, Andres Kubas, there's a big reason that things were so good defensively. It's because he was just eating up the middle of the pitch. Exactly like why you have a defensive midfielder designated player. Like that's the poster child right there, a performance like this. I also thought that Pedro Vite, whether it be like just skilled little touches on the ball, his defensive work rate, his defensive effort, you know, it's tough to compare yourself to Andres Kubas in the midfield, but he provides added value as a central midfielder defensively for Vancouver, which I think is, can't go underrated given where he was a couple seasons ago. And I feel like if the Whitecaps are able to figure out the front three a little bit more, Pedro will have a bigger role to play in the attack, but it's kind of contingent on them having a little more dynamism up front. And then obviously off the bench, I mean, Ali Ahmed, it's kind of like, need we say more, really? He can't come back to the starting lineup soon enough. And, you know, if you want something to give that front three a little bit more space to roam, having someone who's a threat like Ali in a wide position probably helps a heck of a lot with that. So, yeah, those are kind of, I guess, you know, the players that stood out to me. Schopf, I mean, great goal. We know he has quality. Doesn't really do a heck of a lot other than the odd moment like that. But great to see him get on the score sheet. You could tell he's a guy that's well liked in the room as well, because, you know, players were psyched to see him score, I think. So, yeah, I guess, Alex, your thoughts on some of those guys and maybe anyone else that stood out to you individually from this match?
Yeah, I think really to cap things off, Kubas deserves a big cap tip, so to speak, because he flew under the radar. All the headlines will be all Ahmed scored a worldie, and boy, did he ever. But Kubas was just exceptional in the middle of the park. He was just winning everything. It felt like anytime San Jose got between the lines, he was sticking his legs in. He was causing all sorts of nightmares, all sorts of problems, and then he'd send it right back in transition. And I think the Whitecaps had a bit more of transitional threat earlier. He could have been even more influential in the game on the other side of the ball with some of the counterattacks he was springing. And that's ditto for Evite too, who's doing a nice job of deputizing. So I think that's good. That midfield pairing, very solid. The Whitecaps got some good depth there now. Sebastian Berhalter, Alessandro Schopf coming off the bench. Maybe that's the role he needs, where he can just kind of come into games and bring a little quality. We can, at least you're going to see someone who can keep the ball in possession. It's just for him, it's the legs, right? How much can he run? And now, of course, some bit of news for those unfamiliar, may as well put it out there. Ralph Priso, midfielder, Canadian midfielder, 21, from the TFC Academy, was included in the trade to Colorado for Mark Anthony Kay. So he spent the last 2 years in Colorado. He'd just been traded to the Whitecaps for 150K in conditional jam. I imagine the conditions, something around minutes played or something like that. And then a conditional first round pick. So the condition is it's the lowest of the two Whitecaps picks. They have two this year. So they'll hope they make a run to MLS Cup and ends up being like 28 or 29. But yeah, lowest of the first round pick and then a third round pick. So not a bad price for another depth midfielder, a 21-year-old. Seeing how much the likes of Vite and Berhalter have improved in the school of Andres Kubas. And who knows, maybe Kubas will have a new understudy. I guess he has two new understudies. He already has Jeevan Bodwell too, technically, we can't forget. But now Ralph Priso, another young understudy. I love, maybe that's what how you make the most of your DP signings. You sign them to be very good now, but then you sign a, boatload of young guys who can be around them and learn from them and become mini versions of them. The same way Vite's improved his game so much defensively, Berhalter has, and Priso will look to do the same. He's been very good defensively in the past with TFC, is playing more of a six. He has had some bad runs with injuries, so he'll add to that midfield depth. So just thought we'd throw that in there. I mean, I don't know, Sam, if do you have anything to add on the trade from your perspective?
Sure. I think the thing that I wonder about is what the knock-on effect is in terms of the overall picture in that midfield four for Vancouver. What does this mean, the addition of Priso, that is, for Seb Berhalter, for example? Like, does this mean that, does Priso just slot in behind Berhalter on the depth chart? Does this mean Berhalter's moving out to a wide position more often? Is this, in Priso, I know that it's not really his profile, but is this yet another player that Vanny tries to turn into, a wide midfield wingback type? I'm just curious where Sartini will go with this. I guess also Priso maybe seems like someone that's primed for some, heavier Canadian championship minutes. I guess I'm just curious, Alex, for your thoughts on the use case and what kind of knock-on effect it might have elsewhere on the squad. That's kind of where my mind went immediately.
Yeah, I think I'm not too worried, because I think there's the big plus is its depth, and I think that's important because Vanni Sartini mentioned
to reasonably affordable Canadian depth is like never something to complain about, right? And I'm sure, I think as you're about to mention, there's going to be absences as well, right?
Well, that's it, because Vanni Sartini mentioned there's a strong chance that for Copa America, they could miss their entire midfield four, like, even across the summer, because from left to right, if you got Sam Adekugbe, who's, if he's fit, you imagine he goes to Copa America. Ryan Raposo could earn the mix, with Canada. You never know if he continues a strong season, the fullback position, there's a spot there. Or, of course, there's always that China fishing rod that's, hanging out there if he chooses to go that route. And then you got Vite, who you, if he continues a strong start, will surely get called in by an Ecuador. Cubas will be called by Paraguay. He continues to get called. All of a sudden, that depth, right? And heck, even Berhalter, this one wouldn't affect them till late July, early August. The U.S., it's an Olympic year, and they for a U23 squad, Berhalter is still eligible, so maybe he ends up getting selected for the Olympic squad. So I think to have that midfield depth is huge. And then from there, I think in the hierarchy, they'll be just given the chance to work up. I wonder, for example, if there's a vision where he kind of also starts with MLS next pro games, because, yeah, it's a bit weird to think for someone who has already shown decently well at the MLS level across a decent sample. Like, I think he's got like 1500 plus minutes at the MLS level, but maybe that's how you build his confidence. You throw him in there, you pair him and Badwall with the second team for a couple games, get that confidence built up. And then, yeah, when it comes to a Canadian championship, that's another Canadian name you can use with the idea that long-term, look, you have to operate under the idea that if Pedro Vite keeps playing like this, he's not going to be around much longer. Certain ditto with Ali Ahmed. I think to build up that depth now in the likes of a Berhalter, Parisso, guys who can step up if those departures do happen, I think is also worth noting.
Yeah, those are good points. Yeah, I was wondering about that with the next pro. Like, is that a kind of a bridge too far for Parisso? Would you really want to do that? But Pedro Vite played a match or two a couple of seasons ago. So if you're just trying to get a minutes, and then as you mentioned, I think come the summer there will be some opportunities. So yeah, I'm keen to see what that looks like. I think Vanni Sartini has a creative mind when it comes to getting the most out of players. So someone in Preso who very clearly has not like maximized on his potential, it feels like both stints in Toronto and Colorado certainly didn't really go according to plan. And, he wasn't never really found any sort of stability. So I'm hopeful that Vanny can help Preso find his next step in development. And hopefully that's with the Whitecaps and he can find a role. So we'll be tracking that for sure. Alex, any final thoughts from the San Jose match? I mean, really the attacking struggles, the defensive solidarity, the couple key player contributions, that kind of sums it up, really, I think.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much most of what to say about the San Jose game, because, yeah, it's such a weird road game in the sense that it was very much survival.
Prototypical road game, if you ask me.
And it's good because they didn't have that under their locker for a large part of last year, at least not till the second half. So I think it's nice to see that they're continuing a bit where they left off, and you're really seeing that fight, that mentality in this room. And yeah, look, you know what? There were some good moments of fight too. I think that's another area to note of, I think, for example, it was interesting to see Fafa Pico get a little feisty at one moment. You end up getting a bit of a joust with the San Jose player. So clearly a bit of fight, a bit of just that grit, and then get some over the line in the end. And look, these are the sorts of road wins that they'll look back over the course of a year and be like, oh, if we finish here, this is why. If they finish third, they'll be like, oh yeah, that win helped us push them over the line. It was good because there were a lot of games last year where they missed the boat. But yeah, of course, now they'll look to build that this weekend in Dallas. We'll dive into a preview of that one shortly. But before we do, of course, we've got Around MLS in 5. Of course, for those unfamiliar, it's where we take a quick look at what went on around MLS this weekend. And yeah, certainly, let's just say no offense to this Whitecaps game. There were a lot of more entertaining games that went on. There were some really chaotic ones, like Minnesota-Orlando was just absolutely uncut chaos. Like, it was two goals in the first 5 minutes. There was like a 95th minute winner. There was a brawl at the end that got both teams fined. Like, there was a lot of good drama there. There's some other crazy games across the board. Montreal, Miami was completely unhinged. But yeah, overall, very good week in MLS. So we're in around the MLS 5, lots to talk about. Sam, what kind of stood out to you to start?
Well, yeah, you mentioned it, at least with CF Montreal, that the Canadian teams continue rolling. I mean, who would have thought, good on John Herdman, man. He finds a way to get his teams involved and inspired. I don't know how long this is going to last in Toronto, but it's certainly entertaining while it's going on. So shout out to them. And then CF Montreal, you know, the messy-less Inter Miami, but nonetheless, you know, a Miami squad that's been good so far this season. And Montreal, you know, I think showing signs. We kind of talked in the preseason, there's players, there's elements of the squad the like, but it maybe feels a little unfinished or in the early stages. But obviously they have good coaching. They have some quality players. I thought Chouinard was immense in that match. He earned my second place vote for player of the week. So yeah, shout out to the Canadian teams. Very disappointed not to see Seattle, Philadelphia. That's one I had circled on the calendar and I was really looking forward to, but the rain was crazy there. The pitch just looking absolutely soaked. You know, we can talk about soaked pitches and maybe a match that shouldn't have occurred on the women's side of the game, but that's outside the MLS realm. And then for me, you know, I'm feeling bad already because I kind of tapped Orlando City as a team to watch that could be dangerous this season in MLS, and they are off to a tough start in both CONCACAF play and in MLS play. It's not been a great couple of weeks for Orlando, but their matches are always like hectic and very enjoyable to watch. So yeah, I guess those are kind of the ones that stood out to me. And then Alex, you kind of were watching a couple things in the Eastern Conference that caught your eye.
Yeah, it was again an entertaining weekend in that regard. I think the big one that stood out was that Orlando City game, just because it was like Duncan Maguire came out absolutely on fire, and
he has to be so happy that move to Blackburn got canceled, because he's gonna get a massive move, I would think, either in the summer or at the end of the season.
Yeah, I guess that'll be the silver lining. The only thing is, what the heck are they gonna do when Muriel's fully fit? Is it gonna be two up front? How do you fit him, Facundo Torres, Nico Lodero? The guy on their team. Wow, let me check his name. They have this winger.
It's truly gonna be like a 4-2-4 territory, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And because they have that one, the winger. I think it's Enrique. I don't know how to feel about this guy, because he's only 22, an Argentine winger, 10. He could kind of play all over. The like three or four games I've watched him this year, he's had like seven big chances. He gets into incredible positions. The only problem is he's finished like one or two of them. But that's a good thing. You want that out of a young player, right? So he can get a good position. So they've got him. You know, Angulo is dangerous, cause problems for defenses. Ojeda. This Orlando team, it feels like they just got to shore up at the back, because they've been uncharacteristically sloppy. Galese's looked a lot slower than usually he is, because he can be one of the best goalkeepers in this region on his day, at least at the club level, of course, of him being from Peru. This Orlando team is a weird one, but look, it leads to entertaining games. And this Minnesota one, speaking of, Minnesota looks like a fun team to watch. Like, they haven't even had their coach yet. He only arrived in the country, Eric Ramsey. He didn't even go to the game. He watched it at home. And it was funny because he mentioned in the media that he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be watching this one from home. So as soon as the Apple TV broadcast came, they're like, hey, Eric Ramsey, hope you're enjoying watching at home. But look, he's obviously must be liking what he's seeing, because I think they have 7 points out of nine. They've gotten them all late, too. They have two late winners and a late equalizer. Got a Canadian playing well off the bench in the attack, and Tanny Oluwaseyi gets an assist now. Two assists, one goal. Both assists were on late winners. His goal was a late equalizer. They got Dane Sinclair doing well in net despite allowing a few goals. He made some big saves. And like, they've just got a deep enough group. Like, Pukki's quietly was a good signing up front. They finally needed that nine. I like that Jung signing, the Korean winger. He looks very dangerous. Like this Minnesota team, Bongi off the bench. I'm liking what I'm seeing there.
It's interesting from Minnesota, because the way they've won these matches has maybe felt a little like Austin FC of a couple of years ago, where they're just kind of scraping it together and getting through some late game winners. However, as you just outlined, I like this squad a lot more, and I feel like I just didn't expect it to come this soon. I thought that maybe the end of the year, next year, Minnesota, you know, with new coach, they'd really start to get together. But it seems like things right off the bat are are just flowing. So I wonder if that's sustainable, if there's a drop off, a regression 5 games into the season. But for now, I mean, Minnesota's, I think, you know, a team you circle on the calendar to watch in a weekend, and a reasonably dangerous force to be reckoned with in the West.
Yeah, and look, I mean, look, imagine what's going to happen when they get some time under their new coach. Because I think, again, they have the roster looking at it. Like, I think it's been the big thing over the last few years. Who's gonna score their goals? They've had Reynoso cooking, but now they've got Pookie. And yeah, it feels like, okay, maybe you'd love to see what him and Pookie and a Reynoso could do, because I'm not quite sure what's currently happening with Reynoso, but he wasn't even in the squad in this game. Obviously, it's been a bit of a complicated last few years for him with Minnesota. So interesting to see where they go from here, but it feels like Pookie's a good signing. Because look, Reynoso looks like the news is he's got a bit of a knee injury. So look, if he can get healthy too, that's another weapon to add along with all the other names mentioned. Otherwise, just to kind of round off some games I watched. I watched Atlanta versus New England, George Giakoumakis, which, by the way, I finally made a good fantasy decision. I dropped Messi because I saw that he wasn't even training. I dropped Messi for Giakoumakis, and Giakoumakis rewarded the heck out of me with a hat trick. It was a perfect hat trick, too. Shout out to that. I love when strikers score perfect hat tricks. He scored one with his right, a banger of a volley with his left. The right one was with his penalty, and then a header to get the perfect hat trick as Atlanta looked dominant. The other one I watched, I think, was a bit more relevant and a nice segue to our next section. I watched Red Bulls versus Dallas, and look, this Red Bulls team, they look fun. They have a bit of a swagger about them again. The few times I've watched them, they've got juice in the attack. They're not scoring as much as they should. They're missing a lot of big chances, but they look fun. And I think the guy that's really continued to excite me, maybe we're looking at an early MVP candidate, genuinely based on what I've seen from him, is Emil Forsberg. That looks like a brilliant move. He just looks to fit in this team. He makes things happen. You kind of wonder at 32 what kind of legs he'd have in him. I don't know. So far, he's looking like he's the sort of attacking piece they need. He scored from the penalty spot this week, and I thought he had a great game. And that's good, because this Red Bulls team, they've got pieces at the back. They can be solid. They just needed some juice up front. It looks like they've got that. As for Dallas, though, it's been a weird one to start the year. They beat San Jose, but they lose to Montreal at home. They lose to Red Bulls now. A couple tough losses against Eastern opposition. Heading into this game against the Whitecaps this weekend, they'll look to bounce back.
Yeah, it's been a strange start to the season for Dallas. They're able to beat San Jose at home on opening day. It was 94th minute late game winner from a tight angle that maybe really shouldn't have gone in, but you know, Dallas was the better team in that second half and kind of surged. So, you know, there's positive signs there. It just feels like the goals aren't quite there. I mean, looking back to last season, we're chatting before the show, right? FC Dallas finishing just behind Vancouver in the West, 2 points back, plus 4 goal differential. Vancouver obviously a plus 7 goal difference, but the real standout differentiating factor between these two teams, Vancouver scoring 55 goals, conceding 48 in 2023, FC Dallas scoring just 41, but only conceding 37. So, you know, Martin Paz back there in goal, I think a real strength for this FC Dallas team, and the defensive line was good. But despite having Jesus Ferreira, Paul Arriola, you know, some really talented offensive players, the goals just haven't been free flowing for Dallas these last couple seasons. So it's one of those areas where, you know, kind of like what we talked about with the Whitecaps in this past match, but on the grander scale, Dallas has a nice platform. They have a good squad. It's a question of opening things up a little bit offensively. Obviously, they splash the cash this offseason as well, bringing in Pedar Musa from Benfica, I think, right? Yes. So, you know, that's a high-priced, a record transfer striker that they're able to bring in from Portugal. It obviously has the pedigree and, you know, it's kind of the age and profile of someone that could be a a huge impact contributor in MLS for the next couple seasons. So Dallas, I think, banking a lot of their hopes in terms of improving that goal scoring output on Musa having a big impact. But yeah, it's just a question of getting those pieces to come together, Alex, right? I mean, we've seen that with the Whitecaps. We've seen that with other teams in MLS where you have all the right ingredients, but are you really able to maximize and get the most out of it? And it's so far it's been a pretty competitive Western Conference. Things are wide open. So, you know, Dallas not off to the hottest start, but still very much in the mix here. And, you know, they'll be looking to, kind of like San Jose, they're looking to kickstart their season against Vancouver. Can the Whitecaps play spoiler, or do they suffer a road defeat where we're just going to have to wait and see?
Yeah, I think this Dallas team is a very weird one. They're very low event, like you mentioned, like just the numbers as you see. And even in that New York game, watching them, they're low event, but then they just come alive in moments. But really, to be fair, I think what's interesting with this Dallas team, they have the pieces already with what they have. They've got the pieces, but also they've been hit hard by the injury bug. I think it's important to notice Asier Ilaramendi, the former Real Madrid and Real Sociedad midfielder, has been excellent ever since they signed him last year. He's missed the last couple with an adductor. He looks out for this Whitecaps game. Paxton Pomacall, I always have been very high on. I think he's a very good midfielder on his day when healthy, but he continues to struggle with injuries. Sebastian Ibiaga, I'm pretty sure it is, or at least Ibiaga. He's been injured as well. That's a center back piece. Farfan, they've got the young Brazilian Jovan Jesus, I think 23-year-old center back as well. So they're missing some key pieces of their back line, yet they continue to defend relatively well, thanks to the likes of a pass on goal. But the big one really has been Alan Velasco. He, it was excellent, but then he got injured. I think it was in the playoffs last year against Seattle, which is too bad because Dallas legit had a chance to upset Seattle. But then Velasco went down, and that was a huge blow. And they're going to miss him to start this year because it's an ACL. It'll be long-term. Those sorts of things, you could see it dragging out into even June, July, August, right, before he's up to speed. And I think that's a shame because I think when healthy, you put Jesus Ferreira, who continues to be very good, score goals, put up assists. I know U.S. fans aren't always the happiest for that because they'd love to see him make a jump to Europe, but he continued to do very well in MLS. He got a Musa in the fold now. I think that having Ilaramendi, Velasco, all those guys healthy together, guys like Paul Areola thrown in, this Dallas team could be very fun, but it feels like they're both the injuries, and also it feels like even when healthy, feels like they have another gear to click that Nico Estevez hasn't quite found the right buttons to push. And it'll be interesting to find that because it feels like if not, they'll be destined for like a sixth or seventh place finish, which look, isn't a bad thing. They'll make the playoffs again. They'll be dangerous like they were. Last year they finished seventh and they took Seattle to three games, which, hey, the Whitecaps, they were swept in two games by LA. Like it was good from Dallas to do that, but in the end, they just kind of ran out of juice. And they'll see if they'll hope this new look team can do that. But I don't know. We haven't seen the best from them yet. And maybe the Whitecaps will be what they need to find it.
I mean, I think it does demonstrate how competitive MLS is in this era, right? Where there's really very few teams, certainly in like the Western Conference, as you go down the list, who you go, oh, these, you know, this team has no real dangerous players or doesn't have any squad depth. Like, every team down the list, there's things you like. There's dangerous players. Is overall the roster's decently well constructed. It's just, I think in 2024 in MLS, things like the coaching, things like squad chemistry and cohesion really matter in terms of, you know, these fine margins, fine lines between, as you said, you know, finishing sixth, seventh in the West and pushing for that top four. It's the exact same spot, that kind of tipping point that the Whitecaps find themselves in, right? Are you going to be in that messy middle of the Western Conference? Are you going to push for top four? If Dallas can figure out, they don't even, a kind of like the opposite of Vancouver last season. Vancouver last season, I was saying it over and over again, they just need to be a mediocre, decent defensive team to take that step. For Dallas, if they could just be league average or, you know, decent offensively and they maintain that defensive record, they'd push up the table. So I think the potential is there. It's just, can you open things up in attack without exposing yourself a little bit at the defensive end? That's the constant battle that the football teams face. So I think this is interesting. I mean, it kind of seems poised, Alex, for another first 60 minutes of low event, cagey, disciplined defensive play. We'll just have to see, you know, how that turns out in practice. I didn't have a great track record. I went for a high event 2-2 draw last week, and it ended up being 2-0 Vancouver Whitecaps. So I don't know. I feel like this is maybe one where we get that a low event draw, but maybe we'll go back to the well with the draw prediction there. But I mean, how do you see this one playing out? And also, do we think that, does Vancouver, given FC Dallas's potentially defensive posture, is this another one where Krylak starts, where we see, do we see Luis Martins again? Do we see Jermaine Brown again? Is Ali Ahmed ready to go 65, 70 minutes? It'll be interesting to see how Vancouver sets up, given I think you know what you're going to get for the most part out of FC Dallas.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think one fun thing, though, which is just, again, you can make of this what you will. FC Dallas right now are fifth in MLS, sixth in MLS, I can't count, in possession at 55.7%. The Whitecaps are near the bottom at 44.5%. As we saw against San Jose, they seem to be comfortable right now and just sitting back, eating pressure and hitting on the break. Dallas comfortable holding the ball despite, maybe a bit more of their defensive nature. Another thing that's interesting about this Dallas team, they've been playing with more of a three this year. It's been like a 3-4-2-1. I wonder if you're the Whitecaps, you can get that speed out wide. Maybe there's a room where you draw Dallas's 3-4-2-1 up the field. Wingbacks get a little high. Because I know Areola, for example, has been playing wingback at times, and he's not a natural wingback, say. I'd prefer him as more of a winger myself. Maybe there's some room for a Pico to hit that sort of space in a transition. And, you kind of just frustrate Dallas, like kind of pull an Uno reverse card. Because you know that Dallas will frustrate you when they're behind the ball and organized well. That means maybe you create some transition moments by playing a little more defensive, kind of like you did against the Quakes. But as you saw, if they're going to play that way, they need a Pico on the field. So that's maybe a matchup I could kind of see where for Dallas, they like to hold the ball. They like to attack, but I think kind of their skill, and it's interesting, you saw it a bit against Red Bulls. Once they're set and behind the ball, they're good. It's just what happens in transition moments, what happens when things get a bit sloppy. They got hurt there a few times. And so for the Whitecaps, how they'll look to manage that, because if they sit back too much, Dallas will wear them down. They've got pieces to do that. The Whitecaps as well, they've still got to push back and find that balance. But I think it could be interesting in that regard to see that matchup manifest.
Yeah, the possession one is interesting because you maybe would have thought, like with a Krylak in the front three, with Vite pushed further back, all those things would kind of indicate maybe a little bit more possession style, and yet they've kind of gone the other way with it a little bit through the first two matches. And now you're matched up against a team that likes to hold the ball, likes to just kind of control proceedings. So yeah, does Vancouver try to beat them at their own game, or are they just happy to concede and go for the rope-a-dope strategy again, soften FC Dallas up through the first 60 minutes, and then throw Pico on, throw Raposo on, throw Ali Ahmed on if he's not ready for more minutes, and just go, all-out attack in the final 30. We'll see what Vanny and Michael D'Agostino have been cooking up. They've, despite the fact it's maybe not been pretty, they found a way to get results through the first two matches. So that's something to track. I mean, yeah, Alex, are you expecting dramatic lineup shifts here, or do you think that they run back with something pretty similar to what we saw this past weekend in San Jose?
Yeah, I think maybe little tweaks. I can't imagine we see too many tweaks from that lineup. So I guess maybe to kind of dive into a lineup prediction, I'd probably maybe wager a guess at Takoka in goal. Back three stays the same. Laborda, Veselinovic, Blackman. I think you can bet on Kubas, Vite in the midfield. I wonder how close Ahmed is to a start, or if, because if he's done 15 so far, he's done 30. Logically, it would suggest 45 is next up. So maybe do you want those 45 from the start? Do you want 45 off the bench? I think if he only has 45, I'd go off the bench, just bring him on for a second half. If he has 16 in his legs, then I'd say start him and bring someone on. So we'll see. So I think if it, based on that question, either an Ahmed or a Poso could start out wide, just to, because again, I think you want that sort of more attack-minded wing back to kind of attack that space that Dallas might leave in behind. The only question is, who does the other wing back end up being? That's kind of going to be the big question. Do you go Martinez? Do you go for Brown? They both had like okay to solid performances against San Jose. Didn't really notice them, but they did their job. I'm kind of torn. I'd say maybe you go Raposo and Brown if that's a combo, or Martinez and Ahmed, or you go Ahmed Raposo. If I were to pick one, I'd probably say Raposo and Brown. Just I don't think you see Ahmed ready to start, and then up front I go Gold, White, Pico. Stretch the game out, get his, especially your Dallas going to hold more of the ball, get that speed, get that transitional threat early, because I think it's been clear that every game he's been come into, he's changed it. So why not get that jolt of energy from the start?
Yeah, I do think Jevaine Brown is such a frustrating player at times, because every moment you think he's sort of out of the mix in terms of the squad and that maybe they're going to move on, he just, you know, through injury, through decent performances, he finds a way to sneak himself back into the conversation. And it's a player with, I think, a lot of good traits. You know, he's got the athleticism. I think in a wide role, like either as a back four fullback or in this position as like a wide wingback mid type, some of his defensive deficiencies are alleviated. You know, some of the stuff that you worry about with him in a back three, you're not so worried about if he's pushed out in a more advanced role. The only thing with Jevaine for me is that the play with the ball at his feet, like in tight quarters, quick one-twos, he's an even worse version of Raposo when it comes into playing like speculative crosses. You know, we already see that from Raposo where he's just whipping in balls from everywhere when there's no one really in the box. I feel like Jevaine just, you know, that's kind of the one tool he has in terms of attack. Jevaine's not really going to take on guys 1v1, not really going to threaten them with pace all that often other than just running down the line. So I think he deserves credit in part for the great defensive performance that the Whitecaps put out against San Jose. I thought he was really solid, but yeah, he just doesn't offer a lot, I think, in possession in terms of, you know, getting the Whitecaps going positively in attack. Like I thought in the first, you know, in the first match against Charlotte, where he had Jevaine playing at the back, you know, the fact that he was getting on the ball so much was not a good thing for Vancouver, because it kind of ended up a lot of attacks fizzled out before they even started. So yeah, I don't mind that. I think, as you mentioned, probably if Ali's looking at that 40, 45 minutes, probably makes more sense for him to come off the bench. And if Vancouver is going to hold a ton of possession, I'd say maybe go Luis Martinez, who I thought, I will give a shout out to Luis. I thought him and Blackman were really, really solid against Espinoza in that San Jose match. So credit where credit is due. But yeah, maybe Jevaine's the one prime to start in this one. And then Alex, I mean, I feel like they're going to go Krylak again up front. That's kind of the vibe I get. Are they able to do something a little bit differently, different tactically? I hope so, but I guess I'm also not holding my breath. I don't know. What does Fafa Pico have to do to start? Does someone have a vendetta against him? Is his fitness not good enough to go 65 minutes and we just don't know about it? I'm wondering what's going on there, because it seems so obvious that he should have earned a start at this point. It just hasn't happened. So I feel like there has to be some reason for it.
Yeah, you have to imagine, because you feel like from a competition standpoint, if he's doing well off the bench, give him a start, see what he can do. So maybe, who knows, we'll see if he has the juice to do so. I mean, he started games in preseason, so it's not like it's a completely foreign concept to suggest he starts a game now based on his strong performances. So look, we'll keep an eye on what happens there. But I think what's nice is this Whitecaps team got a pretty decent core of guys you can expect to start in week out. It's just kind of tinkering around the edges, especially with injuries and whatnot. So we'll be interesting to see what they kind of throw out of full. Really, it's the wingbacks. It's that third forward, because the rest of the team you can write in pen. And yeah, I don't know. For this game, I'd probably go Raposo Brown, especially, you know, you can go Raposo a bit more offensive. Brown, at least what's nice is he can kind of be a bit more defensive, give you a bit more of a shield because of that more defensive minded. Whereas, you know, you go maybe Raposo's Martins. That's something you could see at home, say, where you're a bit more on the front foot.
I would say too, someone did make a good point in the comment. Comments on the third sub. I was going back and forth on Raposo versus Brown. And needless to say, I didn't agree with everything that was said. But I thought the one good point was that because Laborda likes to be so aggressive, having Brown on the same side does allow Laborda that freedom to roam a little bit. And I thought that was a decent point I hadn't really thought about. So I think it's worth mentioning and why maybe the Raposo-Brown combination makes sense, at least in the short term.
Yeah, or even like Brown or Martins, right? Like how you kind of pair Raposo-Martins a bit more offensive-minded with the Brown. I think that's something that makes sense. I'll be curious to see what happens when Ahmed gets thrown in the mix, who ends up being the left-sided option. Because, you know, Ahmed will certainly be playing in a free role. So, but knowing him, he'll be able to cover the ground to make up for it. So will they trust? I guess the idea is that you have Adekugbe by that point, and he'll be a bit more defensive. So yeah, it'll be interesting how that wingback group develops, especially when it does end up being Ahmed, Adekugbe, the two A's, the double A, I guess we'll start calling it. And hopefully double A ends up playing a big role for Canada this year, even though if they'll hurt the Whitecaps. But yeah, we'll see how things turn out. But I guess on that note, do we kind of just want to dive into some predictions for this one? I think so far we're not doing great, because we both predicted wins in week one. They end up trying, and then we both predicted ties last week, and they ended up winning. So maybe just like, if we can find a way to vote against each other, well, one of us will win, but even maybe not, because, you know, conventional wisdom seems to be going out the window. I'll start this week, because why not? I feel like you've started the last few. I'll take the pressure off. It's tough. I'll be bold. I'll go for a win. I think, let's see. Look, I'll just for a bit of fun, Montreal and TFC drew their first games, won both of the next two. Of course, the Whitecaps are behind because of their bye week. They're due a win based on that inferior, like that undeniable, very obvious logic that we'll look to follow. But no, I think the Whitecaps, they can build off what they showed against San Jose. This Dallas team's kind of there for the picking. They've actually had decent results in Dallas in the past. Like they play relatively well there, where at least there's, you know, there are always competitive games there. Look, I'll go for a 2-1. It's the boring choice. I love me a 2-1, but I think there's something where, okay, maybe they're not perfect again defensively, but maybe they get a goal or two, especially finally from the start of a game, they get a lead in the first half. Because of course, this time they led in the second half, and then who knows? Well, the game opens up and there it turns into a 2-1 win. So I'll go for that.
I like the confidence. I think I'm going to go, I kind of already tipped my hand. I'm going to go back to the well with a draw, and I'm going to say this is 1-1. I just feel like, you know, after a big road win this past weekend, they have the home stretch coming up where they're hopefully going to be able to rack up some 3-point performances. Dallas is kind of, I don't want to say desperate, but they want to gain some points at home. I think that, you know, this is, they've got at least a point in it in this match. So obviously the injuries, I think that's a bit of a blow for Dallas, but I see it going one of two ways, either your way or the draw way. But yeah, I'm going to go 1-1.
Yeah. It's tough to say. It could easily be one where it's a let off, right? You lose. And then still, I think you're not mad about it.
Given our predictions, that seems like the most likely outcome at this point.
Both of us are going to be wrong. So sorry if they end up losing, but no. I mean, even then, I think a draw would be a perfect result, funnily enough, because I think that would leave you after three games, one at home, two on the road. What do we always say? Win at home, draw on the road, if you can. Like, that's good. Like, that would give them 5 points. And they've played, that would have been the win at home, which of course they didn't get at home, but that's it. When you lose at home or drop points at home like they did, you have to make it up elsewhere. They did. I think if they can get a draw now, get them up to 5 points, that would put them in a very good position for this home heavy schedule to get some wins, get off to a hot start, and do what they said they want to do, what we didn't see last year, the last few years, that hot start. It's really set up for them, and I think it's nice they got a win on the board early. There's a place to build. And yeah, you're looking at this Dallas team. It's ripe for the picking. Montreal a few weeks ago went into Dallas and ground out a win. So why not the Whitecaps? So we'll see how it ends up going. It should be a very intriguing game. And yeah, it feels like this is one they'll want to win because, I mean, luckily they've been sort of spared for their next game, which is RSL at home, which is during the international break because shout out MLS for that. They'll be missing Kubas for that one. I bet my money they're going to be missing Brown for that one with Nations League. We'll see who else they call. Luckily, though, no Ahmed gets called. It sounds like the discussions were had between Ahmed, the Whitecaps, and Canada that it might be better for him to play 60, 70, or 80, whatever it is he is at in that time, and go travel, leave the medical staff, go be in a Canada camp. So I think it's nice that he'll be around as a starter, especially with Kubas gone. But yeah, they'll be missing some guys, so it'd be nice to get a win here so you can kind of head that buffer into a game where, of course, you want to win. You're at home. RSL will be missing guys too, I'm sure. But at least you can head into that sort of game, not be like, oh, we need to win already at this stage of the season. I think a win this weekend would give them a nice cushion.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as long as the Whitecaps come into this home stretch with a point out of this FC Dallas match, you're feeling good. The confidence will be flowing, and we'll see if, the Whitecaps can really hit their stride with some big, I think there's also going to be a little bit of that pent up fan, pressure, anxiety, whatever it is, like. That crowd was ready for a bit of a release, a celebration during the opener. It didn't happen. It was a bit of a testy 1-1 draw. I feel like a big win in those next couple home matches could really create a bit of a buzz in the city, get people excited. The days are getting longer, the weather's getting a little bit better, soccer's in the air. Can we get people back involved and interested in the Whitecaps again? I think some big home wins after a solid road trip would go a long way. Alex, sorry, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was gonna say the big one for me is March 30th, Portland Timbers. I think it's a 7:30 kick Saturday night. Win that one. I think that'd be a good one to win. A Cascadia game. Now it adds a bit more because Maxime Crépeau is there. He's not the most popular guy in Whitecap circles. I'm often reminded when you're having national team discussions and then Whitecaps fans come in, they're like, oh, F this, F that. Yeah, fair enough. Understandable. But I'd say that's a good one to go win too, especially after Crepo kind of got the last laugh multiple times with LAFC last year. I think that's the one where I'm circling, or get a big win in that game. Maybe that's what the Caps need to really get a bit of a jolt.
Miller, McGraw, Pantemis as well. Phil Neville, former Canadian men's national team staff alum. There's lots of little connections there. So that's a fun one. In addition to the fact it's just Cascadia, right? So this is a match to watch out for. But speaking of matches to watch out for, Alex, just before we wrap the show here, as part of our sort of, around the world in MLS, what are you watching out for this weekend? I think for me, we heap some praise on Minnesota. So Minnesota LAFC, for me, that's one I'll be tuning in. Obviously LAFC super impressive on opening day, a little bit mixed since then. Minnesota's been off to a hot start. Two teams in the West that obviously the Whitecaps will be keeping a close eye on. So that's one I'm watching out for.
Yeah, I'll throw two at you. Why not? I'll throw one from each conference. I'll give you from the East, Columbus Red Bulls. I think that's a very tasty matchup. Columbus somehow been winning despite CONCACAF Champions Cup. They scraped through today, or not today, yesterday. I'm mixing up my days as I tend to do. But they scraped through, but they got the job done, moved on over Houston. It was very close. Houston had some chances to knock them out entirely on away goals, which would have been quite the story. But Columbus continues to fly, and they want to fly in league play. And I think Red Bulls has been one of the strongest teams out the East so far. That's going to be a real heavy hitting matchup. Columbus did well to rest guys this week. Like Cucho only played 60 minutes. Diego Rossi came off the bench. They rotate a lot of key guys in the midfield through the back. So Columbus Red Bulls, and then in the West, I have Houston, Portland, just because Houston, because of Champions Cup, their focus has been elsewhere. They only have 1 point so far. Houston was very good last year. I think they'll want to get the points on the board. They're at home for this one. They're coming off a really frustrating loss against Columbus in Champions Cup. And I just highlighted it because may as well highlight Portland. They're off to a good start. 7 points out of nine to start the Phil Neville era. They had a heck of a win against New York. Like, it was not looking good for them to start. New York could have been up by more, but Max Crepo, as he does, saved the day a few times. And then Evander did Evander things to end the game, scored from like, what was it, 30 yards, 40 yards to win it in the end after, the new Brazilian that they have, Antony. I think he ended up scoring the other goal. It was a bit of a Brazilian affair for Portland.
I was just going to say, Evander is a player that I love to watch, but probably would be very frustrated to have on my team because the performances, the effort level, the shenanigans sometimes, it can be so patchy, but the moments of brilliance are awesome. So those two Brazilians in Portland, it's been something to watch so far this year. And obviously there were moments from Evander last season that were pretty memorable too. Alex, I'll add one more because we can't help ourselves. We talked about the top two teams in the West so far on 7 points. It is worth pointing out that the next two teams in the West, LA Galaxy and St. Louis, play each other in LA this weekend. So that's another one that if you're looking for those teams right above the Whitecaps in the way too early MLS Western Conference standings, it's one to watch out for. You know, people were saying St. Louis is going to have a massive regression. I feel like that's still very much on the cards. So far, the Galaxy were sort of off-season champions, and you know, under Greg Vanney, they are doing some good things to start 2024. So another match to watch out for there.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very tasty one, and yeah, lots of good ones. I like the ones we looked at in the West, especially Galaxy and Portland. Those are two, because we talked about how LAFC and Seattle were kind of the runaways, but all of a sudden Seattle, it's, you know, the injuries, you know, kind of all hitting them. Of course, we didn't see them this past weekend with the rain, but you know, it feels like Seattle could get off to a bit of a slow start, whereas Portland, man, like that Portland team looks good. Like the fact they made the Miller move, they brought in Crepo, that was huge. Chara continues to play like he's 25. It genuinely defies logic how good Diego Chara continues to be. Antony and Evander, look, it's fun. Like you say, it's probably not always the most enjoyable, but it's fun. That makes sense. And then, yeah, they're just signing this Cabecita from Club America, I think he is. $5 million striker. So, like, this Portland team is going to be fun to watch. And then LA, like, it's Ricky Puig, right? I think Vanny called him before Messi came in the best player in MLS. And look, other than Messi, you can very much make the argument that Ricky Puig is up there because he is just excellent to watch. So going to be interesting to keep an eye on Galaxy and Portland. If you're talking about the Whitecaps being a top three team, those feel like the two kind of early contenders to push for that spot in the West, assuming LAFC and Seattle are the top two. But hey, even with Seattle dropping, all of a sudden the LA and the Galaxy could be pushing at the top against their El Tráfico rivals. Portland, of course, pushing their Cascadia. Who knows? Maybe they'll be the five, right? It'll be the three Cascadia teams and the two LA teams. How sweet would that be, I guess?
Yeah, I think certainly so far the Western Conference has been even more interesting than I expected. We knew that mid-pack was going to be mixed, but maybe the top echelon of the West is going to be a mixed bag. And I think that would be a lot of fun if you have five, six teams all competing for those top spots rather than a couple teams distinguishing themselves and then a bunch below. So looking forward to tucking into some of those matches this upcoming weekend. Looking forward to being back on the ground in Vancouver next week. And looking forward to this one down in Dallas as well. So Alex, any final thoughts here before we sign off?
Oh, I think on that note, you can find me on Twitter at Alex Gongerizic and on Blue Sky at Alex Gongerizic and the .BlueSky social. They throw in. Be nice to get that app up to a full off semi beta version, although they added hashtags. So I guess progress is incremental. I'm also on Instagram and Threads at AG on the case. As usual, very convoluted social world these days. but we're working our way through it, doing our best. And you, of course, make sure to find the pod. We post it mostly on Twitter at the Third Sub Pod. So follow it there if you want to keep up with it, keep up with the episode. And if you've enjoyed the show, feel free to drop a like, drop a rating on Spotify, Apple, wherever else you may use it, because it does mean a lot and helps us out. And of course, it means a lot to see that people are enjoying the show. So definitely feel free. It's a pleasure as always to tuck in to a bit more of an express episode this week. Really not much to talk about despite a big road win. It's just such a like weird game, but certainly next week against Dallas, big international break to come. Some big games are on the dock, and I'm looking forward to breaking it down on the Third Sub.
Yeah, you can find me as always at Samuel_Rowboat on Twitter at thethirdsub.ca. We'll have your pre and post match coverage as per usual. Give a little shout out to the guest starting 11 contest too. You know, you're only two matches into the season, so it's not too late to get involved. If you think you know what the lineup's going to be, if you think you know what the score is going to be, let us know in the comments. We track every week your lineup predictions, your score predictions, and run a contest all season long. So if that's something you might be interested in, get involved. And we'll be back again in the week with more, obviously, keeping a track of everything going on in MLS. Starting to maybe, Alex, we're going to have to take a peek at the CPL in a little more detail here soon. League One BC as well. So, you know that we're going to have all that content for you over the course of the next couple of weeks and months. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. We'll chat again.